Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Let's go.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Benchtown TV. I am Paul, and with me today are Kyle, Luke, and producer Dave. The four of us. That's a Kyle for those of you who don't know his woos. That is that's Kyle. We are back to talk about The Witcher. We're going to be doing season 3, episode 7 today. What is it called? Out of the fire, into the frying pan. If you're here for the first time, welcome to Bingetown TV. If you are here with us on our separate Witcher feed, welcome. But be sure to check out our main Bingetown TV feed. That's where we have everything, including over 400 episodes. Ooh. We officially broke number 400 with our last Witcher coverage episode. So there's got to be something you like there. Go check us out, please. You can check us out at BingetownTV.com. Follow us at all of our socials, wherever you get your podcast. And be sure to check out our Discord. You know, a lot of fun theorizing going on over there. But, you know, back to the
shout
Witcher.
Shout out to Meryl.
Meryl. She's just everywhere in there. Every show. If you want to shout out like Meryl, be sure to check out our Discord, dude.
Apologies if we're mispronouncing. I know we've discussed it before, but no harm intended.
We can't hurt her feelings. She's the best, right? This episode. Longer episode, seems like, but not a whole lot going on. You know, mostly catching us up on the direct aftermath of, you know, Tor Lara exploding. What were your guys' initial thoughts to this one?
First of all, another non-banger of a name. Like, what is going on here? Because me and Dave even talked about it yesterday, and we were scrolling and looking at the names of all the other episodes. Everything else has been good until last episode and this episode. Like, they're normal episode names. I don't know what made them change it to these weird, like, meta sayings of our time. It's, I don't know. I don't like it. I'm sure the community doesn't like it at all. But anyway, the episode itself, it was like a good breath of fresh air after the breakneck speed we were just sprinting through last episode. But I will reemphasize what I was kind of getting at in the episode 6 coverage, where I kind of wish they spread out the climax of Arethusa, and then this felt like a season 4 opener kind of thing, where we just wake up with Ciri in the desert. I think that would have worked a lot better, and honestly, it probably would have been easier to introduce Liam in Broquelon like that, rather than wasting Henry's second to last episode with 5 minutes of screen time. I'm sure we're all not happy about that, because we only have one more freaking episode with him. All that meta stuff aside, like, I actually kind of enjoyed it. And it's mostly because of how much I love Freya Allen. And I think every time she has a chance to be badass as Ciri, it's awesome. And that monster at the end with Little Horse was exactly how I pictured it in my head in the books. Like, this did a lot of good things with the books. Couple things that stepped away from it. But honestly, how I pictured a lot of this part of the books, like, it did a good job. And I was happy to see it.
I'll just pick it up from there, just because I have the book knowledge. And I just want to make my comments on that. These past couple episodes have really been following the books very well, like almost to a T. And it just makes me again question, like, what did Henry see in the show that could have possibly made him think that it wasn't, you know, following the book route? Or it's just, I feel like we're just now more than ever as paralleled to the books as we can get. And still, for whatever reason, Henry didn't like the direction of the show. So I'm just kind of confused, because I've been really enjoying it as a book reader, seeing everything from the pages come to life, and it's been adapted very well overall in my head. This episode, again, yeah, was a little bit slower coming from the heat that was episode 6 of last week's or last recording's discussion. But overall, solid episode.
I thought that visually this episode looked really good. Mm-hmm. You guys watched it before I did. or at least some of you did. We talked about it a little bit in our group chat. So I honestly watched this episode on 1.25 speed on Netflix and
didn't miss anything.
I think it went very well for me. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a slower episode, so I think it worked out well that way. But yeah, I mean, the one thing I kind of took away, a big thing I took away from it, some Luke already said, is just like, it kind of sucks to see Henry like this in the second to last episode of him. Mm-hmm. But there's hope for the future.
Dave, to comment on your comments on Henry. Yeah, I don't know if he stated at the like end of, you know, season two that he wanted out and he just had to film three or what, or yeah, exactly what you're saying. Maybe their plan for season four after they split is going to be different. I don't know, but it's crazy. It seems like they reverted back to the books and that's when all the stuff gets good. So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll just have to see, because we don't even know what's going to happen with him. Like, yeah, we said,
we
only have one episode left and it's just like, it's heartbreaking. That's it for the initial thoughts. We can just jump right in. We're going to cover all of Siri first, and then we're going to hit the other lines real quick, other scenes real quick, excuse me, with Yaskier and Geralt. But yeah, we open up with just the sky spitting Siri out in the middle of the desert. And that's like, you know, one of my worst fears, just like waking up in the middle of nowhere with no help.
It got a laugh out of me when she just says Geralt ? And I was like, look around. Like, I mean, like, I know that's like a definitely would be your instinct. It just made me laugh of like showing like that literally nothing around. And she just goes, Geralt.
She's really got abandonment issues, man. She's got abandonment issues.
True.
I will say she has been in so many like visions, so many dreams and so many illusions that her first thought might have not actually been, hey, I'm actually in the desert. This could be an illusion. So I will give her that benefit of the doubt. But yeah, she panicked for a little bit, but pretty much got her shit together. She knew that because of the Red Sand, she was in Korath, and she tries, you know, getting her bearings going with the sun after she pops her arm back in. That's always great. But yeah, I actually tries calling to Yen, but it won't work either. I guess it's just too far. There's just magic is like so scarce in this desert. They kind of touch on it later, but it's just not working. So yeah, she kind of starts taking off trying to get back. She wakes up to footprints next to her here and there. Does the one scene where she's already getting cuts and scabs from the sun. So she's putting on the cream and then she eats it and then she drops it, you know, goes back to it later that night. See, she's been walking the whole wrong way the whole night. So she's really like breaking down, but
I would have cried.
Oh, it would have been terrible. Imagine just all that effort. You just say, oh, keep going, almost there. And then like you're back to the start.
Totally would have been a waste of moisture, but I don't think. I mean, if I had tears to cry at that point, I think I would have cried them.
There's no way you're producing anything.
Yeah, probably not. But I mean, I would have fucking tried.
Kyle, you already said it. This episode looked visually amazing. Like even during the day, the desert looked great. And then at night, the blue and then the sky looked fantastic.
Her like that singing as she walked up the dune at night looked really, really good. I was just screaming at her to put something on her fucking head the whole time.
She does it day two, right?
She finally does it. Yeah. I was just like, come on, girl.
I'm thinking of the American Paul, you know, the American Dad episode when they're all stranded in the woods and Stan during the day like pees on his clothes to like keep cool. And then they freeze to his head at night. it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, just pee on your clothes. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't show Siri pissing on her clothes in this episode. I don't know why.
But it really took me out of it.
Yeah. The realism was just not there.
Yeah. It was definitely immersion breaking.
I did like this quick line, you know, after the sun starts coming up, she's like, oh, thank you, Cohen, for the advice. Like, get the dew on the drops on before the sun rises and stuff like that. So just a nice little Witcher name drop from her time in Caramore. Because it's season two, we like to pretend Caramore never happened, but yeah, we don't like season two. Luke does. The royal we. But anyway, she finds a small pond of water and goes up to it, and thank God she put her hands in it first and not dunk her head in immediately, because it was just a bunch of goop. And when she's like questioning what's going on, she hears a whinny or a neigh. And all of a sudden she turns around and sees a unicorn. And then, you know, that was the warning. She does dodge out of the way. Super cool roll. But
crazy cool.
Crazy cool. Reflexes for having zero energy left. Kyle, when you saw this unicorn, were you thinking vision or were you thinking real? Just curious.
No, I totally thought it was real. If I'm honest, I just was so curious whether they were going to try to censor its cock. That's
that was the first thing I looked for, and it, yeah. They did, and they absolutely did.
Yeah, so.
But they didn't censor the balls, which was so weird.
Yeah, it was funny.
It was a strange.
Yeah, I was like, I looked and I was like, yeah, that's a real horse. That's a real horse. Those are some real balls.
Crazy. Did you notice that Paul and Dave, at least, like, I got pretty hyped when the opening title sequence goes and you saw the unicorn as the symbol for the episode?
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this moment because, like, in the books, like, this is a long part of Ciri's journey, and it starts here, and we have a lot to get through, and the desert's a huge part of her character growth and stuff, so especially with the end, but I'll save those comments for later.
Yeah, so we get Little Horse, as Ciri calls him. She's just following him everywhere. She kind of disappears every once in a while, so Ciri's back to walking on her own, but she finds lizard eggs, so she goes to eat those, and in the middle of this, she gets her first vision of her mother, Pavetta. Just a weird conversation of her mother shit talking her in her own head. It's just saying, like, you know, look at you now. You're not a princess and all this stuff. Anything you guys got from that conversation?
Each vision was just like a fear of hers. Well, maybe not like a fear, but just like an issue that she has. Like Pavetta was talking about, like, again, the abandonment issues, like, you know, just she's always alone kind of stuff. And then Calanthe later on is talking about how she's fearful of her powers and everything. So she's visualizing the internal thoughts that she's constantly having of just herself. And that's all I really took it as. And I honestly thought at first the visions were coming from the lizard, because, like, I think this is here when she, like, she has the vision, she screams back, and then she sees the lizard, whacks it against the boulder a few times to kill it. And I thought it was magical animals producing those visions, but I guess it wasn't. I guess they were just actually, like, her own visions of just, like, from being dehydrated, maybe.
I think the whole purpose of it was basically just to be a parallel with what Falca's vision was telling her, like, the complete opposite, like, pulling her the other way, trying to, like, give her a way out. All the way until the very end, her last decision to relinquish her power, whatever that actually means. But I think it was just supposed to be a parallel. Like, it was pushing Ciri to the breaking point to allow the Falca vision get to come in. And Paul, were you getting Ruraku Malazan vibes the whole time?
No, now I am. Now I'm.
Oh my God. That's all I was thinking about.
Imagine being that lizard and being like, yo, what the fuck did I do to piss you off so much?
Oh my gosh. She went absolutely sicko mode on that thing.
It reminded me of Hills, because I've had to do the same. Like, a crab, like, pinched my finger, and, like, the only way to get it off is to just, like, smack it against something. And so I was just, like, flicking this crab against this wall, just trying to knock it off. And it was just the exact same vibes.
That was always nice, like, Wednesday morning, like, 7:45. Like,
yeah, love having
just,
my
just
fingers
fighting
pinched.
With crabs.
Yeah.
Fucking ice
fucking
cold
Wednesday.
Yeah. Classic.
Side note, me and Emily were watching Bear, and she's like, oh, I love how he's... like he's always drinking water out of the little, like, to go cups. And I'm like, oh yeah,
that's the best water ever tastes.
Oh yeah. It's the best.
It's out of those things. Yeah.
Shout out to Hills.
Let's talk about so she bites the lizard and the poison makes her trip and see Falca, which we now know is the later reveal. Remind me, cause me and Alki were having a conversation, that Falca was the statue we saw in the episode one, right? Was that the thing? No, was that so. That was a different elven, like, figurehead.
Yeah.
You're talking about episode one, like season three
of this season. Sorry, yeah. When they're having the conversation before the really cool fight when Rience and Francesca show up.
Like, yeah, that was like, her name was like Aetherin or something like that. I said it so wrong, but it was different individual. That was the individual who got the elves to bring up arms against the humans for the first time or something like that.
So the squirrel thing, that was the setup for the squirrels. This is completely different. Okay.
I think Falca, right? Was the first one who basically got, like, captured by, I don't know if she actually got captured by the humans or, like, her own people. Her history is a little wonky. Like, especially
she got burned alive,
show.
She says. So.
But yes, she was, okay. I believe she got burned and then killed her father, who was a cog in the wheel, and the system failed him. It wasn't his fault. Falca's a weird.
It basically was just like a story of Ciri that happened in the past. That is, like, now Ciri is basically following the same path as Falca. She's just going to have the option of whether she wants to, like, I guess, repeat history or break it. You know, that's kind of how I took it, is that Falca maybe herself isn't that important. I think she is, but, you know, it's just, I think it's just a parallel of, like, Ciri, this has happened to other people like you in the past. Like, I'm part, you know, elder blood, whatever. And she's just trying to help her show her that history repeats itself, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense, because the final point she tries to drive home is she gives the Daenerys speech where you got to break the wheel kind of thing.
Yes.
And that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Stregobor had a line right before he set all the elves on fire last episode where he said, Falka will be waiting for you. Mm-hmm. And Falka's kind of like not their god, but like they kind of worship her in a way. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
A martyr or something.
Yeah, she's exactly. Just like an ancient ancestor. The one, and she had the elder blood, obviously, that Ciri has now. So,
and let's clarify something too, why you brought up the elder blood, because me and Alki and Dave were trying to have a conversation about it. So the elder blood is running through Ciri, through Pavetta, and technically through Calanthe.
Yes.
Okay.
So Calanthe has a little bit of that. Okay, yeah. That was the piece we wanted to make sure we knew. We had straight.
Calanthe, it's coming straight from her, but it skipped her. She has a line in season one.
That's right. It skips her. Yes.
She has a line in season one where Ciri's power first shows, and she's like, oh, I guess it is true. They do skip a generation or something like that. Yeah. And so Calanthe never had it, and that's why she was so gung ho with the sword and going out and killing everybody. You know, she got, you know, her did her first battle when she was like 16 or something like that.
She gained power in a way that she was going to be able to get it for herself, not through bloodline.
Yes. Now, if you do the elder blood shit with making witchers and all that shit from season two, I don't know what the fuck's going on there. I don't know if that'll ever be a thing ever again, but probably who knows?
Calanthe's actress put in a fucking shift in this episode. She was fantastic.
She's great.
She's pretty much the next scene, right? We have the little horse leading her to the actual source of water.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really there, right?
No, it was interesting though, just to hear Ciri try to search for veins of magic and like actually get to the vein of water, and she could just feel it was there.
You mean mud? It was basically fucking mud.
Yeah, basically mud.
Just chugging point, mud.
You don't give a fuck.
Ew. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess she offered something to the horse, and the horse was like one little lick. Like, yeah.
I'm good.
Maybe not the best. I'm not trying to shit my brains out.
Yeah, as a courtesy, I'll give you one lap.
Yeah, this is where we get the title of the episode, too. You know, Ciri said Vesemir called this the frying pan, and hence, you know.
The episode name should have just been the frying pan. Like, what's the deal with the whole out of the fry? What is it? Out of the fire into the frying pan? I agree with Luke. It's just so weird that they're trying to be all meta all of a sudden.
Or like the wheel.
The wheel, yeah. Break the wheel, something like Wheel of Time.
Or like Wheel of Time would have been a fantastic episode name. You're right, David.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
I almost feel like out of the fire into the frying pan is like a cliche at this point for episode titles, because I feel like I've seen that in other shows. Like one episode's called Out of the Fire, the next one's called In the Frying Pan.
Why do I feel like see that? It was an insanely hard achievement in like Call of Duty or something. Like there was something I just have a like spicy, I remember this being mustard. Something. Yeah, something like that. Like
it might have been a campaign level or something like that. Now
something
that
like that.
It.
Yeah.
But anyway, while Kyle looks that up,
yeah. how to unlock Out of the Frying Pan. This is a story-related achievement and will be unlocked upon the completion of the mission, The Enemy of My Enemy.
And, oh my God, that's impressive, Luke, that you actually got that down
in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Warfare 2, of course. That was the easiest. Yeah, that mission rings fucking heavy in my fucking head right now.
I just had a weird memory of connecting it to Xbox, that saying.
It looks like we're also geniuses. Out of the Frying Pan, Into the Fire is a treasure hunt quest in The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
Then that makes me feel a little bit better. Yeah, but I'm sure the episode of last week was not like a mission title. Like that was just bullshit still. All right, sorry, we're sidetracking.
Oh, what the heck, bro? You let us hang in there. The fucking hey, man. You know all the Witcher 3 titles of all the treasure hunts or quests.
The only reason we had you on the podcast is for this stuff, and you're just failing us.
I haven't played the game to completion with all like 300 something missions.
The only thing I know from the game, what's the card game?
Gwent.
Yeah, Gwent. That's all I know.
Great.
About the game.
Gwent's so fun. I would come home hammered sometimes and just play Gwent. Like I would log on and play Gwent.
Oh, it's great. It's so good. But anyway, back to the show. We already got Calanthe looking wild as always. But right as she disappears, Ciri goes to punch her and punches a rock instead. I started laughing. I was like, come on, man.
With the arm that she dislocated her shoulder.
Oh, wow.
I mean, at least
that thing would have popped right back out.
At least she's not thinking of food anymore. She's all the pain is in her hand right now. So she's not hungry, I bet.
What a good
every time she's hungry,
solution.
She should just break a finger or something.
Yeah. It's like, God, yeah, I'm not even hungry anymore with this broken finger.
She gets discovered. She's all her fingers are broken. It's like, what the fuck happened to you?
Each one is a day. Each one of these is a day of food.
Yeah. Well, Dave laughs because apparently he enjoys hand injuries. Yeah.
So Falca comes back and is literally like, my advice, don't eat the lizards and don't punch rocks. Like, good advice, inner self. They have no little conversation. I wrote down nothing because I picked up nothing from it. A little horse comes back. They keep walking again. And this is when they walk up to the desert scorpion. And Ciri doesn't know what's going on. She feels something a little off. And all of a sudden, this shit pops up. Way bigger than I was imagining it in my head. And all I could think is, all right, what are you going to do? What are you, Ciri, going to do against this monster after you dropped your sword when getting startled by Vilgefortz last episode? I'm still so mad about that. But yeah, what'd you guys think of this?
I mean, it's great. I mean, like Luke said, anytime Ciri gets to show off her witcherness, I think it's a huge W. I was a little worried for her. I was not sure how she was going to get out of it, but I think she did a really good job. I think she takes a piece of the monster itself that breaks off and she just smashes its head in repeatedly, basically. Not a bad way to beat a monster, I guess.
I think it was part of the is the right way to say it, carapace? I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like the outer shell of like a crab. And I think she ripped it off and then she got to that weak spot and shoved it in and just started punching it into the only like spot that was actually vulnerable. But this monster was terrifying. I think this is Ciri's best feat as a Witcher. Like, this was insane. The way she was like dodging, it's like its claws, its poison claws that were coming down. I already knew that the little horse was going to come and take a shot to the stomach because of the books, but I it's so sad whenever you hear animals like fucking make those noises. Suffering. Like, it just, I just wrote my notes. It's just like, ugh, like I don't like hearing that stuff, but knew it was coming. But Ciri, again, like, I will never stop praising her when she does badass Witcher stuff like this, especially because like the slow-mo jump into the middle and just like, oh, that was so cool. It was really, really cool.
And it's, I mean, this was her first like alone kill, right? Because we had this, I forget the name of the monster from a couple episodes ago, but her and Geralt kind of beat it together. I mean, she deals the finishing blow, but here it's like mano a mano, her using her survival skills to survive, and she pulls through, and it was so awesome to see. I love seeing her just taking all that Witcher training to heart, and she's a badass Witcher at the end of the day, even though she doesn't have it in her.
The monster I would want to fight the least of anything we've seen on The Witcher.
I don't know, the Striga from fucking, that was pretty terrifying.
Yeah, the Striga would suck. Witcher sign, is that using chaos? Does she not use like art or whatever right there?
I saw that too. I was thinking the same thing. I think maybe because she, I guess, had slight access earlier with the water that potentially gave her enough to just conjure an Ard sign, but it's not like she was using them crazy left and right, but you're right. Yeah. I did catch that, the magic wielding. Mm.
And yeah, I don't have an answer for you if that was a Witcher sign or just magic in general. Witcher signs are supposed to be like a lower form of magic, like a very basic and fundamental.
They're like cantrips from a fucking D&D, yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
It's like a trick.
Use it whenever.
Yeah. So I don't know, but thank God she did it because it saved Little Horse. Yeah, after the victory stance over the dead body, she turns around and sees that Little Horse is in fact not doing well. She says, I'm going to take care of you, but they just kind of walk to a little camp real quick.
That made me laugh. She's like, I literally thought she was going to put her hands on the horse and start healing it. And she just puts that little piece of cloth and was like, you got to get up.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, bro.
Be a little bitch. I'm okay.
Just rub some dirt on it. You're good.
Yeah. She just like lays that little cloth on it.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So they get to a camp and a fire is just kind of going. And I kind of wish they just showed how they made the fire. Like,
I agree.
Why not?
I literally wrote in my notes, now she can start a fire, ?
Yeah, seriously. Like, why don't just show us like her hitting two stones together and all?
It's either here or like soon after she's like bitching to one of the visions. Like, I literally have nothing around me. I can't do anything. And then it's like, well, you made a fire with nothing around you, apparently.
But doesn't that happen in the books? Like, she does make a fire or something. Maybe it's described in the books, probably.
No, yeah. I just genuinely wanted to see, like, why wasn't she making it earlier to cook the lizard? She was just going to eat that shit all and then go crazy.
Which is interesting. She was obviously reluctant to use the fire magic. So why did she make the fire? What was the point? What's the fire? Was she going to cauterize the wound with, like, our hot rock?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe she was chilly. You know,
yeah,
crazy
I bet.
Desert sun.
Maybe they were going to eat the scorpion monster.
Maybe she was going to eat Little Horse. She was waiting for him to die. And then she was just going to cut him up.
No, it was motivation for the horse right there. It was like, don't fucking die or you're going to be fucking BBQ'd on that.
Who knows? So. Maybe the fucking scorpion skin is like highly flammable. You just leave it in this. I don't know. trying to help out here. Just trying to help the cause.
She looks at the cut. She sees that it's just unbelievably infected, like black veins going everywhere. Now she's like kind of losing it. Falco returns to give her the vision. She's yelling at her vision, like, I can't use magic. Like, there's no source anywhere. And then she points to the fire and Falco's like, well, what are you talking about? It's right there. So she goes over, puts her hand in it, goes over, heals Little Horse, and it works. But Little Horse is scared and runs away. And I don't know exactly if it's because, you know, just got hurt and just recovered from it, or if it's literally scared of Ciri using the fire magic.
Probably the latter.
Personally, I felt a little upset that Little Horse was used as a metaphor for people who are afraid of her.
That's what you picked up from it?
I mean, Falco literally said it runs away, and Falco's like, yeah, like just like all the people that like will be afraid of you or whatever. And then it gets into like her saying like she should kill Geralt and Yen, basically.
Yeah. This was just craziness to me.
I was like, damn, my man Little Horse didn't put it all on the line just to be used as a metaphor.
As loyal as Roach, man.
Yeah,
Little Horse will never be Roach.
That was a great line, though, when Ciri looked at Little Horse. Yeah. Goes, did I ever tell you about Roach? You'd love her.
You'd love her. Yeah, they would. You should have some great half unicorn babies.
Not with that missing cock.
Yeah. Oh, dude, they totally CGI'd it out even more when it's laying on its side. Yeah. It would expose gut. I was like, I looked around. I was like, cowards.
I had no idea that this podcast was so intrigued about horse cock editing.
That was the first thing I was going to bring up, baby.
it's more just curious of how far shows will go. I mean, that's a running theme of Bingetown. If they're going to be cowards and not show us cock, or they're going to be fucking real ones and just actually let it fly.
Side note, I never understood people when they post pets on socials, why they put a little sticker emoji over their pet's junk. It's like, their pet doesn't care. They don't give a shit if you see it.
Well, they never consented to be posted naked.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, but yeah, there you go.
Anyway, Falca is giving visions to Ciri about all of her people that she cares about just being tortured and dying. And she's saying, you know, this is your power. Your magic is everywhere. And this is your fate, just to take over. And it scares her a little bit, and after a long vision, she goes, I relinquish my powers, and she just passes out. And all of a sudden she wakes up, and there's a group of, you know, four or so people standing over her. This is the ashen hair and green eyed girl that they're looking for. Come on, like, let's take her. And they just drag her off, and that's all you got from Ciri.
I loved the visual of Cahir like just murdered. That was awesome. But yeah, like, I obviously, like, this the Falca stuff got intense, and like, I thought all the cinematography around it was good. Like, the music sounded good. It felt like intense, and Ciri was just getting visually overwhelmed by the fire that she was taking in. So all of that was even better than what I imagined in the books, which was cool to really, really see it, like, just that on the screen. Do we think Falca's going to come back as like a devil in the back of Ciri's head, whatever?
I would
like
say yes. I don't know, actually, if that was just like a...
I mean, we already
kind of
got it.
Warning.
What was the representation from the Wild Hunt that was like in the woods? Like, I feel like we already got it with that older woman, you know, who took
the
Ciri's... The Deathless Mother. Yeah. I feel like we already kind of got it. Like, I don't know.
Ugh, season two. I hate season two.
I don't know. I think she'll come back. Maybe not as a... voice. I think she'll be like an actual, I don't know.
The only reason I ask is because I thought Falca's actress was really good, like intense and kind of like played really well off of scaring the shit out of Ciri. So I would like to see that just be something that's always there. Like whenever she's even like doubting herself.
Like, I don't even think she's like that evil. Like I get, she was kind of like,
have to be evil, but tempting.
Yeah. Okay. Like I guess tempting.
Because yeah, like every time Ciri thinks about maybe using her power, she like hears Falca's voice or something like that.
Yeah,
because she wasn't like, yes, she was saying like break the wheel, but she wasn't specifically saying like, you know, well, I guess she kind of was saying like just kill everyone. But
yeah, she was saying burn everybody down. She was saying when I got burned at the stake, like I didn't fear the flames. I embraced them and then I used them.
So I don't know. But the more important part of it is Kyle, just the her saying I relinquish my powers. Talk me through what you're thinking.
I'll be honest. I don't know what to think about that. It feels like, I guess there's the angle there that, yeah, one way to break the wheel is to, or kind of change things just for her to not use her powers.
Like just remove herself completely from the equation.
Off of the chessboard. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just don't see that is where it's going. I don't know how we're going to get, you know, if they mentioned they wanted to do 7 seasons and we're only on what, book 2, I just feel like there's not enough maybe content involved of her becoming like a pacifist, like the legend Thorfinn in Vinland Saga. So I don't really know where it's going to go from there. It feels like it was just kind of like a heat of the moment type of thing. She's definitely going to be forced to use her powers at some point. The monoliths and all the other stuff in the world have to like actually mean something.
I was just cracking up because earlier in the episode, like halfway through, she's telling Falca, oh, I have the power to change things. Like I do. I'm going to change things. And then she relinquishes her powers right here. And she's,
well, I mean, she has maybe the power to change things, like I said, without using the actual magical powers. I mean, she herself feels like she can wield a lot of clout.
And we have seen her lean heavier into the Witcher side rather than the mage side of things. So that has something to do with it, I'd say. But
oh yeah, she loves killing. She doesn't like studying.
Next episode is going to be incredibly interesting to see what they do with Ciri. But just for me and Paul and Dave, this isn't like a spoiler at all because it means nothing if you're not a book reader. But are we thinking those are just bandits that are going to lead us to the rats, or do we think those were the rats?
No, I don't think those bandits were the rats. Okay. I think they were just dryads. What do they call them?
No. I'm talking about Ciri. The last shot of Ciri getting dragged. Yeah.
I think it's the rats. I'm gonna go out of there.
I think so too.
I think I'm gonna bring it back. I think it's the girl that we saw in episode 2 that randomly was there when Ciri saves the Wyvern or whatever it is. I think she comes back next episode. But that's just like me just completely stretched. Like that's just a stretch.
That would be nice.
Theorizing. Yeah. Because she made an impression on Ciri, I feel like, in that like couple minutes that she had screen time. And so I think they're gonna reconvene with each other here.
I think these guys are bandits and they're gonna be dead in a few minutes into the next episode.
I thought it was funny that she opens her eyes and she can hear everything they're saying, and like, let's just drag her to the camp. And they just her just laying there conscious, just getting dragged to the camp, not putting up any of a struggle.
The question is, I guess if you're thinking that that's gonna happen, Paul, then is the invitation of the celebratory thing, I mean, just to jump the gun completely to the end of Geralt and Yaskir's timeline, but like he literally puts out the thing that she's home, like she's on her way to Nilfgaard, I guess.
Yeah, no,
but that doesn't change anything.
I think she is such a hot commodity that even if she is in possession, people are going to try to like steal her to be hey, I'm the one that gave
I thought just when you said like those people that recovered her were going to die next episode, I guess someone could kill them for her.
Either way, she's a hot commodity. People are looking for, like, obviously, like, she wakes up and they're talking about her ashen hair and green eyes. Like, that's not something that's common, they say, too. So everyone's looking for her.
My last piece on Ciri's storyline, just for Kyle, is if you haven't, like, relook up a map and look at where Aretuza is and then where the desert is, because that's like a pretty good thing to have in your head of like how far she actually teleported. Because just the best way for me to visualize it for you is think of her being on Lannisport and then she teleports to the desert, which is like in the Eastern Ocean, like in between Westeros and Essos. Like that's how far away across the continent she has teleported from Tor Lara, because she knows the name of that. She names the desert. So that's not like a spoiler or anything. She's just super far.
Yeah, just a classic Witcher no idea where I am, the distance between things. So,
yeah. Like incredibly far.
She said it and I was like, okay, that's where we are.
We're going to open up next episode.
I'm not going to question it or anything. I mean, at first I honestly thought it was going to be like where the wild, because I feel like when we first see the Wild Hunt, it's on like this like desert type of thing. So I thought they were going to come into play more, but they obviously did not.
A better parallel actually is think, what's the Western coast in Wheel of Time? Just any country.
Oh, I look at me like trying to think of west, of like where west is, but that's where like Falma is.
Yeah, so Falma all the way to the Aiel Waste is pretty much how I is like the equivalent.
Yeah. Yeah,
good shit.
Yeah, that's the end of Ciri for now. She's in a bit of trouble. We're gonna jump over to Yaskier running around the remnants of Aretusa, like, oh my god, I fucked up. What is all this? What happened here? Finally catches up with Radovid too. He ends up helping him. He says, hey, I'll smuggle you. I can get you as far as Oxenfurt. Is it because Yaskier's feelings for him? Is it because Yaskier's a good guy? Is it because Yaskier's weak and listening to his feelings? Who knows? But we get that the second war has begun. You know, Nilfgaard caught the entire continent off guard, and the second war has begun. I love the line. Oh, dude, the second war is nothing compared to what Geralt will do to get Ciri back. I was like,
true, though.
Love him, have so much faith in him. Incredible.
The wrath he'll put on this continent, something like that. Yeah. Insane.
He might have had a different tone if he actually saw him get pieced up last episode.
Well, I think this scene here really sets up when he does see Geralt perfectly, because, and we'll get to it, but I thought Joey Beatty's acting there was just incredible. Real quick with Radovid. He asks, you know, come with me or let me be there for you and prove that I'm more than a mask. And Yaskier thinks, all right, maybe. And he goes, oh, I need to go find Ciri. And Radovid goes, maybe find Geralt first. And he's like, what? I saw Ciri in the tower and it exploded. You know, I'm sorry. So he goes out. He finds Yen. Yen says she searched the rubble, can't find Ciri anywhere. But they took Geralt to Brockland for us to heal.
I'm just damn interested right. If anyone else was thinking, like, when Yen's back in Aretusa, it just made me laugh of, like, this last scene of last episode was all of them, like, standing on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Now they're just back in there.
And now, yeah, we're just back in there. I just thought it was kind of funny. It just made me chuckle.
No, it's a weird shot. I agree. But
I mean, they got to clean up.
Yeah.
I'm hyped for Yaskier, though. The love interest is growing a little bit. I think, obviously, something's going to happen there. I hope they can retire happy, these two.
I don't know. Like I said, I hope Yaskier doesn't settle down. Maybe he has, like, he's got a booty cheek here and there in different cities, and he just, like, you know, jumps around.
But Radovid wants to show he's more than just a mask. He's a mask with a cock.
That's what he wants to show. I think he's already shown that. Yeah. But, true. Yeah, I mean, maybe Yaskier does, like, a little world tour farewell.
Yeah.
Just like a one last time. Great. Yeah, one last time with all the pieces in every city.
The Soul King. I'm picturing Brooke. Just a farewell tour.
Yaskier's era tour.
Nice. Yeah, literally.
We got a quick shot of Geralt in Brocklin and the Dryad Ethne healing him. I don't know, the head Dryad healing. Calls him Gwynblade or whatever. I'm going to pronounce that Gwynblade. I don't know. That's just like their term for him, which means something special, which I forget.
They say it. It's the
all right, our SME, everybody.
Is it just the white wolf?
I think it's literally just like his nickname in Dryad. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sorry. You see a lot of vowels next to each other in a word, and I just kind of squish it all together.
Yeah, it's difficult.
But anyway, we go back to Yaskier. He made it to Brockland. He knows he's got to be careful. He's saying, like, hey, I know you guys don't want me here. And out pops like 30 people with bow and arrow. Says, you know, turn around. He goes, you know what? I'm waiting for my friend Geralt. The same thing. He calls him Gwynblade or whatever. And says, you know what? I'll just wait. Sings him a little elvish tune, which makes him cry. And they're like, that'll do, pig. That'll do. brings him in. And did you guys think about this chick with the... That was talking to Yaskier, Dave, and Luke.
Yep, definitely.
Mm-hmm. With the bow?
It's a person.
That's a person.
We'll learn a name eventually.
You know what movie she's in? The actress? No. I cannot believe that I recognized her. unless I'm wrong, and this might sound pretty bad, but she's the brother. I mean, the brother. She's the sister in Shang-Chi.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's wild that you would. I would have never. I looked at her and I was like, okay, this is another no-name actress.
I really like that movie. So I saw her and I was like, she looks so familiar. And then I kept thinking about it and I was like, oh my God.
If she is who we're Shang-Chi. Talking about, like who we're subtly hinting at, I'll be pretty hyped because I like this character a lot. They didn't say, in the subtitles, I don't think they were saying her name like when they spoke first. So I was looking for that, but we'll find out about that. But I do want to say, maybe I'm alone here, but I thought the dryads looked amazing. Like the makeup and like how their heads like turned into like leaves and sticks and stuff. I thought that looked incredible. I know we saw them in the past it might have even been back in season one, but they upped their game. I don't think they did nearly as much.
I think they amped them up a little bit.
I agree, but here. I think they looked fantastical here. Like looked good for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought they looked good, and then one shot, I was like, is that just like straw cleaners, like or pipe cleaners, like on the top of it? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it is good. I don't know. Personally, I like the CGI monsters better, but you know that also costs like millions more. Anyway. We get this unnamed character bringing Yaskier through their camp. Yaskier saying like, hey, I thought you guys were like, kind of like a lone tribe, you know, not no boys allowed type of dryads. What's going on? We see Dara real quick where this fucker's everywhere now all of a sudden. And she says, yeah, war happened, and puts together that the dryads are now taking refuge, or I'm sorry, they are providing refuge for just these victims. Mm-hmm. So they finally get to the tent. Yaskier's being all like jokey, like as he normally is. He's being himself. He's like, Geralt, are you decent? Oh, he's never decent. And he's talking. And as soon as he pokes his head in and sees Geralt and how hurt he is, he loses all sarcasm. He goes, oh my God, his voice gets shaky. All I could think about was, oh my God, Joey, incredible job. Incredible job.
Just, yeah, he's great.
It's just not normal, right? Seeing him like this. And he's trying to be okay and say everything's going to be okay. But Yaskier himself is so shaken up at seeing out in this state. And it is. It's weird. So you know, he's basically crying. He's like on the verge of crying this whole time. You know, he says, is Ciri and Yen fine? He answers, Yen is fine. And Geralt's like, so Ciri's missing. Which he tries to calm him down. He's like, no, yeah, Ciri is okay, she's not okay. You know, we couldn't find her anywhere. Nilfgaard is coming. They destroyed anyone and everything in their way because they want her. And as Kyle said earlier, Yaskier hands over this invitation, which is a ceremonial celebration for Ciri returning to Nilfgaard.
Geralt has to get better next episode. And like, how is he going to get better that quick?
I have a horrible, horrible, horrible feeling that they're going to try to heal him and like do all this shit to him, all this crazy like routine shit. And he's going to be like in a cocoon or have bandages wrapped on him. And then they're going to unwrap the bandages and it's going to be fucking.
What I brought up. I brought that up. I said when he gets fucked up.
You did say that completely.
Yeah, like he changes his face. I don't think that's going to happen.
I'd rather them just not address it at that point. I'd rather them. Then be like, no, oh, look, Geralt got his face kicked in so bad that he's now Liam Hemsworth. Like, I'd rather
he got
him
kicked
than
in
just
the face by Roach.
The showrunner said that they are gonna, it's gonna be addressed in a way that makes sense with the book, like the book universe, which is scary to say that. Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, honestly, just don't address it in my head, but.
But they are going to. So,
but who cares? Because I'm not fucking watching.
I'm more, I guess, in the media curious of, like I said, how like does he get healed? I mean, like he's got to be upright and fighting. You,
they're
think,
dryads
in this last episode. So like,
you don't think dryads have some fucking ointment that'll fucking.
I mean, unless the phone like, into play. Yeah. Like, is it not working so far and it's just going to work? I don't know. I guess I'm curious to see how they explain how.
I don't know. I feel like I personally took it like he wasn't there for that long to get to the point of treatment quite yet. I guess they're just doing minor things right now, stopping the blood. And
well, that's what's interesting of like his head, he's dying, but I guess it's like internal like bleeding.
Yeah,
He really just got his leg broken and maybe like his back.
He's we'll fucked. See, if
yeah, I mean, he definitely got fucked up.
And I kind of like that the healing magic isn't necessarily just like all powerful. It's not like, oh, like you're on the verge of death, let me just hold my hands over you real quick. You know, it's not that easy, which I kind of like about this world. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, Kyle, how the fuck is he going to recover?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even hate the idea that like it doesn't have to be Geralt and Yen saving Ciri. Like, she can save herself. I believe Meryl, shout out to Meryl, has brought that up before when we talked about part one of, you know, the cycle of Ciri always getting captured and needing to be rescued, and then getting captured and then needing to be rescued, and then getting captured and needing to be rescued. Like, it would be nice if like she can get herself out of this, or she takes kind of hold of the situation, which felt like part of the vision quest that she goes on was maybe inching her towards that, mm-hmm. of like, stop trying to even subconsciously accept, maybe not like a victim mentality, but like what everyone's saying about her, how she needs to be protected, maybe like more taking control of her own destiny.
Yeah, here, baby, we're at the end.
Crazy. We got Ciri in the next part of her journey. We got Geralt on his road to recovery, kind of had like a nice little low point going into season 3 finale.
I think we definitely need to see Emir. Like, we need to see Emir one more time. Probably see Jixtra and Philippa just like one more time. They just where they're at, put them on the board. But the rest of the episode, and then maybe Vilgefortz as well. But besides that, I want the rest of the episode just to be Henry Cavill's in every shot.
Just hugging every character, just hugging goodbye.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say Gaheer.
Oh, he doesn't even have to show up. He's dead.
So did anyone look at what the IMDb rating for this episode is?
No.
I'm going to assume it was terrible.
All right. I want everyone to throw a guess on the board. I'm
55.
55? That seems a little high.
No, so it's 5. Out of 10, 5. Right? 5.5.
Yeah, 5.5.
Dude, do you have the whole season in front of you?
I have the whole season, yeah.
What was last episode's?
Last episode was a 7.1.
Which was probably high for the season, right?
6.4.
Which was the highest of the season, yeah, I'll say.
I'm going to say that'll be your hint. 2.9.
No.
6.3.
It's going to be at least like a 5.5.
What is your guess?
6.3.
You just throwing numbers out.
6.3. 5.5.
Okay, Luke takes Dave's old guess. Paul, yeah. What do you got for me? You rolling with 2.9?
Yeah, I'm rolling low.
Okay. But it was 4.3.
Damn.
Holy shit, why? So
Paul won, close without going over.
Hell yeah.
That's like disrespectful, because like Freya Allen did a good job. Like, that alone was
is like by far the lowest rated episode of the entire series.
How many ratings? Like, is it solidified?
That's wild. I mean,
it's at 1800.
Ooh, holy shit. Solidified.
Which is less than most of the the part one episodes have flirted around like 4,500 to 5,000.
Okay. But
last episode got 1800 and got a 7.1.
People are just ready to burn this ship to the fucking ground.
Season 2's episode ratings are like great.
Yeah, it's a great season.
I liked season 2. Yeah. I didn't mind it.
You guys say that one more time.
I didn't mind it.
I was just like looking back, like season 1, 2, like pretty much everything's an 8 and above. Like the finale got an 8.8. Season 2 is a little bit lower, kind of hovers around like a 7, 8, 8. And then season 3 is just absolutely gets.
I wonder
torched.
How much of that has to do with just the news of Henry Cavill.
A decent
leaving.
Amount. Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure. Like, because it sounds like if it was eights, and then it's like, oh, Henry's not coming back. Oh, we fucking hate this show. It's going. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy though. It's a 4.3. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I was like, I shot. I think that's the lowest I've ever seen an episode in my life.
Anything we've ever recorded on, and we knew the IMDb score, that's the lowest I've ever remembered.
Secret Invasion.
I mean, I don't even think that Game of Thrones got crushed like that.
I guess our podcast is going into the drain with Secret Invasion getting a 13, and now Witcher getting 5.5 or whatever, 4.8. Yeah, really. But my last
One
thought,
Piece, baby, One Piece will bring us back tens across the.
No, we're going way more into the ground.
That's a gamble. Yeah, we could fuck around and get
maybe
ones or tens.
It's gonna be ones or tens, either one.
The one thing I want to say though, before as we wrap this up, is just in regards to like the whole comment of Ciri is on her way to Nilfgaard. This is what Yaskir says to Geralt. Is obviously, I just think it has something like, I just wonder, I mean, even though I know what kind of happens next, I'm just putting it like some theories out there in regards to like maybe Vilgefortz was able to finally create a girl that was exactly identical to Ciri, because we already saw him experimenting with those girls a couple episodes ago. So I'm just thinking in my head, maybe he's perfected, quote unquote, one of them, and is now sending that Ciri on her way to Nilfgaard. And I want to just see how Emir potentially reacts to that. Again, I don't know if that's right or not, but I just think that
it would be a Vilgefortz kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it would be up something up with Vilgefortz, you know, doing something.
we'll probably leave the season on him with like a little bit of like a master plan kind of again, in motion because he's there as like a great villain. And
my big one of next episode would be to just have Vilgefortz and Emir talk. Like I think a conversation between those two would be so badass. And I really would love to see that.
That would be awesome.
My parting shot will be that the lowest rated Game of Thrones episode, obviously season 8 finale, was a 4.0. So it's on that tier of how bad people think, I guess, this episode
We're afloat.
Yeah. I mean, granted, that episode, The Iron Throne, has 255,000 ratings over 1,800. But yeah, that's pretty crazy.
I cannot believe that we have potentially less than an hour of Henry Cavill left, but episode 8.
More than an hour. It's a little bit longer, I think.
Is it? All right. Yes. Cool. Thank God. But yeah, that's going to be it. I don't know how this season is going to end. We're in a really crazy spot. I mean, so much could happen. I don't know. All I know is I'm excited and scared at the same time. But we just got to push through, I guess, because I'll
just like Siri, you got to push through.
Yeah, I'll definitely be watching season 4, no matter what Dave is saying out of emotion over here in the corner. But he's
I hate Henry.
That's going to be it for us. If you like what you heard, please follow us on bingedowntv.com. We have a lot of shows that we covered. Guaranteed to find something that you will like. Please join us on our Discord. You know, it's a lot of fun over there. Big community, getting bigger. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.